You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and I'm not even sure whether we're starting over or whether you all got that intro. We are having some technical difficulties, and boom, I was just cut off basically mid-sentence. So we're back on the air, and I'm going to ask Alex. Nobody heard my intro. All right. Well, I'm not even sure whether I'll do an intro then. So this is Dr. Michelle. I'm going to do an intro. Yes, I've just made up my mind instantaneously. This is Dr. Michelle. And you're with me in Dr. Michelle Live, 5734BREAD4, or you can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com or text. It's all great. Log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com to hear archives, or breadboxmedia.com to just look at our general page. You can also become friend of the show. So the intro I was going into was, not only as every day, it's a beautiful day, and it is a beautiful day no matter what. Even if you feel like you're going to tear your hair out, it's still a beautiful day. So I'm here to tell you that. But also to thank you for being patient. My voice, for whatever reason, this last week or week and a half has just been gone again. This is like the third time this year. So I apologize for if I sound like I'm barking. And that brought up the thought of barking seals and barking walruses and how graceful they are. So that's what y'all missed, talking about this little scene that I have not too far from me that I haven't been to in a while. I'm going to go now that I've thought of it, where in the evening time, in the dark, walking down by this pier, or actually by these boat docks, not a pier, that's all sequestered from a jetty, from the ocean. And at night, you don't always see them, you don't always hear them, but when you walk by, then all of a sudden there's barking. And the barking comes from these walruses that are just so amazing. And when you watch them rise up out of the ocean and gracefully, just like a ballerina or Cirque du Soleil, just find themselves, they slide up out of the ocean onto a platform. It is the most beautiful, graceful thing. And as they move around with each other, it's really something, knowing that, you know, you can't go down near them because it could be very dangerous, but it is very beautiful. So anyway, I'll go ahead and align myself with barking walruses. How's that? Do you ever know any woman who says, I want to be like a barking walrus, but today I do? Well, part of that too is I'm glad that that came about, because in deciding or looking at what I wanted to discuss with you today, I wanted to, the last few days we've had some technical difficulties. So our whole program yesterday did not get to be aired. And I wanted to go back on and talk to you about that. But as I'm looking up the article that I was going to refer to, I came across something that really spoke to me very strongly. See, I'm going to cry. And it's not because it will necessarily talk to you, but there is, like everything, we learn from everything. So if there is a piece written or a song sung about something of which you have no ability to comprehend because you didn't go through it, you can align yourself with it easily. Did you get crucified? No. But are we asked, and do you align yourself with the cross? Are you asked every single year of your Christian or Catholic life to look at the cross, look at the cross in all its fullness, and align yourself with it? And why? Because the fundamental, basic human reality of hopes and being knocked out of your reality, knocked out of your ballpark, being loved, then hated, being worshipped and then spit upon, being having your dreams dashed. If Jesus was completely fully human, which he was, right? It's a mystery. He doesn't play the God card. He can't. If he did, it wouldn't be what we think it is or what we're told it is. It wouldn't be fully God, fully human. So that's a mystery. I can't be those things. You can't be those things. It's all a mystery, what part of us and how we have the supernaturalness. But again, look at your life. When you were 30, did you really understand your mortality? Unless you were in war or you were, even then, a lot of times people don't understand them. They might be broken from their experiences, and they may have brush with mortality. But the absolute understanding of truly passing, we don't get until we're truly passing. We may see it, and we may feel it, and we may get our face in it. We may get down and dirty with it. We may try to help it and have it not be able to be helped. But until it's our moment, we don't really know. And so much so, a divinity who takes on the form of fully human. He didn't understand, but that's the whole point. That's why we align ourselves. To have him actually say on the cross, "Have you forsaken me? What, you know, was this all for naught?" And then fulfilling the divine nature. So all that, when you hear stories and you one human phenomenon that we know exists, you learn about it very early on in psychology. It's the ability, or it's the actual phenomenon, not just the ability, because you don't do it on purpose. It's the ability to distance yourself. You find any tiny thing to distance yourself from a horrible tragedy, so that even if it just so happens that you can't find anything to distance you except for the kind of shoes the person wore, you will distance yourself by thinking, okay, well, that distanced me from there. I don't seem to have that lifestyle, or I'm not from that ethnic background, or I'm not from that walk of life, or I'm not that gender. Whatever it is, you distance yourself. But don't fool yourself. You are those people. So today, I was talking to someone early in the morning. I'm talking to someone about a life coach, someone who is a life coach. And I found myself feeling kind of agitated a little bit. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm looking at just me and thinking, oh, you're just jumping to conclusions. Maybe you're just jealous because they're a life coach at 25. And I'm thinking, what can they know at 25? And a lot of people at 25 know way more than I do now. And I'm telling you this sincerely. I would say that people I've known, my daughter-in-law, in some respects, what she has been through with her children and the death of her first baby, I can say she knows more than I do about hope and life and experiencing the worst of the worst and going on and being present and living life. And then one other tragedy after another, and yet she's still a beautiful, happy, funny person with those tragedies still very full and very real. So she does know more than I do. So we're going to get into this on the other side of the break, and I want to bring this to you and get put a little depth to why you feel what you feel. On the other side of the break, I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are the broken. Not all of you are broken, and that's awesome. Today I'm talking to the broken, but I'm talking to all of us because life does what life does. As somebody said this morning to me, life is in session, and life is in session, and it's never a stagnant picture. It is never an Instagram. It's not your Facebook. It's not your photo op, blur the lines makeup. We can do all kinds of things we want to do with it. But it's not, it's in session, and it's raw and it's real. And life embraces your wrinkles, embraces your imperfections, desires your wrinkles and your imperfections. And to try to spend so much time decreasing those, I do it. So I'm not downing it. It's just sometimes we get wake-up calls. And so today I got a little bit of a wake-up call as I'm talking to someone about something I know nothing about, right? I mean, this is something that I just automatically had a knee-jerk reaction to. It was the knee-jerk reaction to the type, to something in my head that wasn't real, but yet I began to understand why when I ran across the article I'm going to share with you. So I get this, we're talking about someone who's making lots and lots of money, helping people. Evidently, I have not even seen her. I haven't seen her at all. Supposed to be a very perky life coach that lives in Bali. And supposedly, you know, very dynamic and hit rock bottom at the age of 25 somehow. And I don't even know why. I just got little sound bites. I know nothing about her. She could be the most amazing human being on the earth. So I'm putting it out there. But I want to show you how I go there sometimes and how you do too. But there are deep reasons why. There are things inside, and sometimes we don't understand it. We try to cut ourselves off at the pass. We try to take out our kneecaps, and we chastise ourselves. And why do we do that? Why do you do that? You do it because you are you. You have lived your life. You have been the one to cry in your pillow at night. You're the one that moved on when they were inappropriately touched by a teacher. You're the one who had an alcoholic father or an alcoholic mother or watched your father throw your mother down the stairs. You're the one who had a sibling die. You're the one that was the only survivor of a car accident. You're the one who had to have some surgery that left you maimed or mutilated, or you're the one that had a misdiagnosis, or you're the one that's having their breast taken off because of breast cancer. You're the one that only knows that. And that sometimes we hear something, and what we hear is an outside echoing of what we feel inside. And part of that what we feel inside is that you have a chest. You have a steamer trunk, like from the Titanic, sunk down into your body, of all those things that you've risen above and that you have survived. And it's amazing, but sometimes there's no place for them in the world. And then we get triggered. We see something. Like I hear something about somebody who supposedly reached rock bottom. And when I hear about their rock bottom, it didn't sound so rock bottom to me. It sounded like somebody was very privileged and happened to go the wrong way into some addictions. And again, I'm not minimizing that because I help those people. I know I am not. I'm just saying that particular image, that one-dimensional thing in my head, the cartoon thing in my own head, made me judge someone. I've never even seen this person. This person lives in a whole nother country and is making a very good living, doing great things. And I'll check them out because they're doing some good things. But the story somehow triggered something in me and I didn't understand why. And so what I did was what you do. I start thinking, or I talk to someone or as you will talk to your friends or maybe your spouse or your mom or your dad or your sister, and talk about how this really upset you or made you irritated. And what you start thinking is, yeah, well, it's only because I'm not happy with my life, or I've passed that place, and maybe they seized an opportunity I didn't seize. And you have it on this very, this upper layer, this upper level of your emotional high rise. And so that's all you go to because you're so used to having that steamer trunk sunk in the depths of your being. So you really don't know where you're going to and where you're coming from. And so I had a call in my own self today. And so as I'm kind of like, you know, not really thinking about it, going, oh, yeah, you know, just another life coach. And, you know, just if I see another, I mean, I am the sucker for all self-help books. I probably have read more than Barnes and Nobles have ever carried on their shelves. It's kind of like when you're a younger girl and you go for every diet to end all diets. You know, it's kind of like war. You heard of World War II or World War I. One of those wars was the war to end all wars. Well, it didn't work so well because we're involved in a lot of wars and the world is involved in a lot of wars and they never stop. So same with self-help. It's never going to stop. There's been self-help since the days of seances in the early 1900s or beyond that, looking for giant, you know, crystals and mummies and, you know, whatever people did. People always went to the self-help. You want something to help you get a little handle on how to have a better life. So I come across this article, and at first blush, when I tell you about it, might not be able to get to all of it, but when I in this segment, but when I tell you about it, it's going to say, well, what does it have to do with me? What does it have to do with me? Unless you are a medical student or a doctor, you'll think, oh, what does it have to do with me? But it has everything to do with you, because it was written by. I'm getting a lot lately of our personal issues that are brought in these op-ed pieces. In the New York Times, and some of them are written specifically about specific experiences, as the woman a few programs ago who had the daughter who was a tomboy and kept being asked if she wanted to be a boy by her elders, by her pediatricians and teachers, and it brought up the whole gender issue confusion and how one little girl, like the Emperor's New Clothes, looks at them and says, are you so confused? And you can look at the archives on that one if you missed it. You know, why are you guys confused? I know I'm a girl. I just want a haircut like Luke Skywalker. So this particular article is called Doctors Are Human Too, but it really is about all of us. It is not about doctors. What it's about, I mean, it is about doctors. And it helps you bring awareness to physicians. And I identified with everything in here. However, it's about everything you've ever gone through and how you don't realize until you see someone else on the other side of the world, a different age group, a different situation, going through something that is very similar, very hauntingly familiar, that all of a sudden that steamer chest just has this little key that drops down from the surface of the water way down into the 20,000 leagues under the sea and unlocks that steamer trunk, and you see these things in there that are as fresh today as they were when you went through them. And for me, see, it brings tears to my eyes, going through very similar things, some of them worse, some of them not as bad as she's going to be talking about here. But it brings up the idea, what she's talking about is wanting to bring the idea of why in the world are all these young medical students killing themselves? And just we have to ask ourselves, why are teenagers killing themselves? Why do people kill themselves? Why are the military at 22 a day killing themselves? You know, and we say it. And when we say these numbers, they bring it into a horror. You know, we can intellectually think, oh, that's awful. But we are so distant from it. But you're not distant from it because you are in one of those groups. One of those groups, or your child is, or someone you know, or your mother, father, sister, brother, grandfather, great uncle, are in one of those groups. Why are all these groups having large numbers of people who decide to kill themselves? And what can we do? Where are we? Part of that we will get into. But you need to understand that it gets down to a place where the steamer trunk gets opened, where you are in the place where you feel like you are alone and isolated. And I think that's where, we'll get to the article on the other side of the break, but I think that's where my reaction to again, an imaginary person. I don't know this person's life. They could have come from the hardest knocks in the face of this earth, and praise God that they're life coaches living in on an island somewhere, having making lots of money and maybe helping someone get out of their, even if we think of them as the wounded well, maybe, you know, they won't progress to the next stage. But many of you feel like, well, then what does that mean for me? What does that mean for me? Because no one knows the darkness I feel. No one knows what I've experienced. But I'm telling you, I know what you've experienced. I've heard it. Other people out there know what you've experienced. They've heard it. They've been there with you, not in the same place, but something similar. And when you hear that nightingale sing, when you hear somebody else say those words, you don't feel so alone. So whether you are in the middle of a shocking divorce that you never expected out of the blue, or you just found out something about your family that you'd rather not know, or you are one of those soldiers who've seen the unthinkable, stay tuned. I want you to hear this article. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4-BREAD-4. In the beginning of the program, I likened myself unto a walrus because, and I think it's beautiful. And I'm thinking that's kind of crazy. But because my voice sounds like I'm barking, I feel like it because I have no ability to use inflection right now for whatever reason, whether it's a cold or allergies, I don't know. But so if I sound like I'm barking this at you, well, my heart is in the right place. And also, it reminded me of the gracefulness. If you've ever seen a seal or a walrus come up from the ocean and then just slide and glide effortlessly onto whether it's an ice floe or a rock or a boat dock in Southern California, it is just magical to see that. And the beauty around us is just unbelievable. So always keep that in mind. So my whole purpose today, I was going to talk about something that we couldn't get to yesterday because our Skype connection with the studio just kept blitzing out. So we couldn't really do a program. We did a program, but it just never got to you. And while I logged on to refer back to the article I wanted to bring to your attention, I saw another one. Normally, it had a title that I would not really click on because, you know, you kind of think you've heard the same old stuff and you never really have. And it was called Doctors Are Human Too. Now, why is that important for you? Not so that you understand how doctors are human. It triggered something so big in me because I was just feeling very agitated, as I told you guys before the break, in case you're just tuning in now. I was feeling kind of agitated after talking to someone about this this young girl, who evidently is making all kinds of great money and helping people, living on an island somewhere as a life coach. And, you know, she's all quirky and perky and happy and all this. And I was getting really weird about it in myself. And not because I still want to look at her. She's a whole human being. But because somehow she has hit rock bottom at one point and came back up. And I can get that. But, you know, but yet, if she's 28, 29, 30, There are things that I know 28, 29 year old and 30 year old who have hit very bad rock bottoms, very bad. I've worked with people who were soldiers when they were 18 and 17 on a battlefield, Hamburger Hill, holding young boys their same age, while their chest is smoking. They would, you know, these things that are so smoking from bullets, so that there's no way they were going to survive. And to me, that's, and even they didn't hit rock bottom then, you know. And I'm not making, again, this person is imaginary in my mind. She's not imaginary in reality. And I will look at her. I will check her out and everything. And I'm sure she's quite fine. And there's, we all need people in all of our various stages. So if your various stage is, you know, looking at the SpongeBob videos and you're nine, we all need our help. We all need help along the road. So I'm not judging her, but I want to tell you what happened in me, because what happened in me does happen in you. And I know this. I know this to be true. And what happened in me was that I found myself getting kind of agitated. And then randomly, but not so randomly, of course, because I always pray in the morning to have God send me, you know, my words and what I need. And 9 times out of 10, what I think I'm going to talk about, I don't. So I talk about something different. I clicked on, as I'm looking at for yesterday's article, I clicked on today's article today called, from the New York Times, called Doctors Are Human Too. Now, I want you to read this because it's about all of us. I want you to hear this. This is from Lisa Pryor. It's a female medical student from Sydney, Australia. And she says, she's a beautiful writer. How can I tell you what I have done? It's a little graphic, so you might want to keep that in mind, whoever's listening. How can I tell you what I have done? Let me start with a doorway. And when she said, I'm going to editorialize, of course. When she said this, I remember many a doorway, and I might cry during this. I don't even know what she's going to say, but I remember many a doorway of hurt, broken people, a doorway of people dying, people not dying, people scared, people alone, people sick. These are hospitals, of course, little children with unspeakable stories, and they're only nine. You know, I remember doorways. So she's amazing just starting with that sentence. What a wonderful person this Lisa Pryor is, a wonderful writer. Anyway, I'm going to stop now if I can get through this out editorializing my own experience. But you can start with a doorway, can't you? A doorway into anything. Let me start with a doorway. I'm looking in at a patient handcuffed to the rails of a hospital bed, arms spread out in a crucifixion pose. The prison guards who have brought the patient to the hospital explain what has happened. I hide my horror behind my calm and neutral doctor face as I unfurl crepe bandages from self-inflicted wounds. Just another set of wounds to add to all the others in my head. The weeping pressure sores of nursing home residents, the gangrenous toes that you can smell from the other side of the room. I know what she's talking about. You may not know what she's talking about, but you know these things that no one else can know that are in your head. These are the things I'm talking to. This is what Jesus talks to. This is not to make you feel more alone, but to make you for more together. And if anything is difficult for you, you call that person today. This is not medical advice again. This is not this. These are the kinds of things that are saying there's help and hope and love and acceptance and warmth for you out there in groups, in spiritual advisors, in friends, in strangers, but mainly also in our medical profession. People like Lisa Pryor, people like your whether they're physicians or social workers or counselors that are there. They've heard this. They've seen it. They can help you. Nothing. In confession, some people don't confess because they think the priest has not heard anything as bad as they've done. They've heard it. And if they haven't and you're the first person, you are opening a door for them that will be their doorway that will help other people. All right. Here she goes. And she's telling the truth here. The job of a doctor in training is unspeakable. It is hard to find the words to describe what we do. It is hard to work out whom to tell. we cannot speak of these things to people outside medicine because it's too traumatic, too graphic, too much. But we cannot speak of these things within medicine either, because it is not enough. It is just the job we do, hardly worth commenting on. Now, many of you nurses out there, you know what I'm talking about. You know, if you're a burn unit nurse, you know what happens. You don't just go and talk to your prayer group about this stuff, about what you see and smell and think and all that. And you sometimes don't talk to each other because you need to just drown your sorrows. When I started working, this is back to her, as a doctor last year, in a metropolitan public hospital in Sydney, rotating through the emergency department and the surgical and medical wards, as all doctors do in their first year of practice in Australia, my experiences were no better or worse than those of any of my colleagues. Nor are they dissimilar to the experiences of junior doctors around the world. But we are speaking about these things now where I am from because my colleagues are killing themselves. Now, put yourself in any profession, in any situation. Think about people who have killed themselves because the stock market went down. I mean, we're talking about these things, all right? Now listen to her, because she is relating to you. And she's young. She's got to be young. You know, I was young when I was in this situation. It has long been recognized that physicians are more likely than the general population to kill themselves, especially if they are female. A meta-analysis of studies around the world on doctor suicide found that female doctors were more than twice as likely as the general population to die this way. Why? Why? And why are females in general more prone to this self-mutilation? Because there is no group for a female physician. There is no group for many of you females, many of you female students. No one has sympathy for you female students who have someone who might inappropriately touch you and you don't really know as they walk in a hall in a school. Where do you go with that? Where do you go when you go to your Alcoholic Anonymous group, as I've had people tell me, and you go in because you've had sexual trauma, and someone there in the guise of trying to help you is kind of like, oh, well, hey, turn some of that toward me. I mean, you can't believe some of the experiences people have when they go for help. I've been in places myself where I have put together pieces when we're in the split therapy world and I'm the prescribing doctors and I have people come into me who have different therapists. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't sound so good. And then 3 weeks later, I have another patient tell me something and think, wait a minute. And then I start putting, it takes me months to put people, these little stragglers come in here and there. And then I connect with other doctors and it takes sometimes 6-7 months to find out that there's a therapist somewhere down the road who's harmful to these female patients. And then it takes even longer to bring that to the proper authorities or have it taken seriously. So these things are hidden and they're difficult. But she's going to tell us more about that. We're going to get to this on the other side of the break. So this is the time to start thinking. Get to your telephones. Talk to those people who are going to help you. Start now so that you can become a more whole person. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. So we're reading this article from this young doctor, and there's a reason we are doing so. And before the break, I said to you really quickly, we were running out of time, but to get help, we just think we're over things. I recall a young stripper who was in because of anger. on the job anger for some reason. And just, you know, she was fine. She just said, I just need something because I get a little angry. Well, the more we talked, the more, no. There were things from trauma from early childhood, from her own father, that she, you don't get over these things, but you do learn to manage them. You're not going to get out of remembering. Jesus had scars. Jesus showed scars. He didn't get those scars. Scars were not taken away, right? That's what Easter's all about. Look at my hands. You know, got scars here. It's all about scars. Yes, we have scars. We don't forget those scars. Don't forget those scars because it changes everything. Those scars are still there. The wounds are still there. Not just to prove. They're still there for a reason. Before we finish this article, and before you start thinking about your own life, hear this. 2 Corinthians 1, verses, chapter 1, verses 8 through 9. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, in our hearts, we felt the sentence of death. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. Think about this really quickly before we go into this. This is our last segment. I want to finish this article because it's beautiful. It's not just about doctors. It's about all of us in any walk of life. 2 Corinthians says, we don't want you to be uninformed about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia. That means the province of Asia, the province of anything, the province of being a doctor, the province of being a prostitute, the province of being a young person in a middle-class family who is being molested by someone or being inappropriate or having a mom die too early. This is the province of hardships. We are under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure. A five-year-old in a trauma, having their mom die or their dad die or seeing something else happen. They can't, it's far beyond their ability to endure. But no, it isn't. That we despaired even of life. So that's what they're talking about. It was so hard, we despaired to a moment. But if you're at that point that you despair even of life, no, you go on to the next step. Indeed, in our hearts, we felt the sentence of death like there's no other place. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. And God raises the dead. We can rise out. We just saw it. We can rise up out of our own ashes. We aren't going to get rid of the scars. It is not going to just all of a sudden feel good and light and wonderful and with birds singing. It might, and I hope it does for you. But maybe we got to go to the hard work. Maybe today's your wake-up call. Maybe these things, this young girl just taking the time to write in Sydney, Australia. I don't know who she is. Beautiful. So I want to finish this for you. So think about this about you and think about any group. She's talking about young doctors and females, but think about any group that you know of, because every group has its own little group that goes, you know, that has lots of difficulties. All right. So she said, when I started working as a doctor last year in a metropolitan public hospital in Sydney, rotating through the emergency department and the surgical and medical wards, as all doctors do in their first year of practice, my experiences were no better or worse than any of my colleagues, nor are they dissimilar to the experiences of junior doctors around the world. But we are speaking about these things now where I am from because my colleagues are killing themselves. It has long been recognized that physicians are more than general population to kill themselves, especially if they are female. A meta-analysis studies around the world on doctor suicide found female doctors were more than twice as likely as the general population to die this way. Younger doctors are particularly vulnerable. In the United States, this is our home, people, United States, an average of 28% of medical students, that's almost a third of medical residents, show signs of depression during training, making them around three times more likely to be depressed than similarly aged Americans. A 2013 survey of Australian doctors by the mental health nonprofit organization Beyond Blue found that young doctors worked longer hours than their older colleagues. Absolutely, I was there. In some cases, up to 50 hours or more per week on average. When we were going through, I'll just say this as the old seasoned doctor, we would work sometimes 70, 80, 90 hours a week. We would, because we would have 7 to 7 mandatory 6 days a week, plus every third night, all night long call. Younger doctors were also more psychologically distressed and more burned out and thought more often about suicide. Here in Sydney, we have lost 3 colleagues in the last 7 months alone. There are many theories about why doctors kill themselves with such frequency. It is often suggested that is our access to lethal means, although to me this does not ring true because it implies the act is controlled and clinical. This is not true of many of the doctor suicides I know, which were brutal. To really understand the suicide problem, we need to consider the issue more broadly and consider and question the simmering distress and burnout among doctors in early years of their careers. This is particularly of interest to me now in my second year of practice as a doctor. I'm working in mental health. Suicide is my day job. With my doctor colleagues in a variety of fields, we are starting to talk about the trauma we face. This is why you need to talk about it. It needs to talk about it. You need to talk about what you faced, ED, past tense, and face now, which we must remind ourselves can really be trauma. Rape threats from patients, the ethical problem of knowing we are getting illegal migrants just well enough for the government to deport them, having to decide whether to forcibly sedate a teenager who is threatening to smash up in the emergency room department or to wait and watch knowing full well that we are watching and waiting for a nurse to be kicked or bitten again. These horrors come to feel normal, and normal world recedes into distant strangeness. She said that beautifully. These horrors come to feel normal, and the normal world recedes into distant strangeness. On a recent weekend, I took a Pilates class. We stretched and bent and complained about our stressful week. But how can I share anything of my week lightly? Stress seems the wrong word. On the walk home, I browsed a houseware shop. I wanted to swipe all the rose gold salad servers and marble cheese platters off the table, smash them to bits. Who let this other world exist? How can we reconcile the two? As doctors, we are more stoic than I will tell you. There is some inevitability to the difficulty of our jobs. Blood and urine and human suffering cannot be escaped. We must face death and our shame for the times we couldn't hold death back for long enough. And you know what? I know many medics who feel that same thing. They never came back home to become doctors. They were just thrust into the medic position at age of 17. But they tell me the same thing. I still feel guilty for those we didn't save as well as those we didn't do the greatest job for. We need to know a lot, and it takes time. And that time will be stolen from time that should be spent with children, novels, friends, and the ocean. We will make mistakes. But as we talk about the ways we can halt the progression from distress to burnout to mental illness to death, we are realizing that not all of our suffering is inevitable. There are practical changes that can be made. We know we could improve doctor well-being with better working hours and by changing practices that leave doctors in fear of being branded impaired if they seek help for mental distress. And they are. In the aftermath of recent suicides, these are exactly the things that are being proposed in my home state. The Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney is rolling out a program for the well-being of doctors and training, which includes mindfulness and resilience training and personal training for physical health. Those who have created the program note that when doctors develop skills to manage their own well-being, it will make it easier for them to teach these skills to others. Beyond such practical steps, there's a matter of medical culture that must be addressed. The unrelenting, unforgiving culture of medicine that weighs in our junior members down with debt and duty. Medicine says you chose this, so don't complain. Medicine says stop being selfish and think of patients. Medicine says that one more year and the worst will be over. And medicine keeps saying that year after year. We need to let go of our shiny doctor selves and accept the vulnerability, doubt, and the imperfection within others trying to obliterate it. We need to find kindness for ourselves, our medical and nursing colleagues, and our patients, because sometimes that is the only thing that will make this path bearable. We need a medical culture that sees humanity as a precondition for being a good doctor, not an obstacle. I want to say that that's not just about our doctors. It is, because I live that and I can vouch for what she says exactly, but it's about you. It's about you and how you view yourself. It's also about you and that these inevitable things in life happen. They're not going to go away. You're not going to have, and I will argue with her on one point, taking better care of yourself is not going to stop another shocking round. It isn't, but it will help you to not crumble yourself. But you need to reach out to others so that you can understand how you need that to happen in your own life. And part of that, please, if nothing else, look up 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 8 through 9. But also take advantage of those out there to help you, because you deserve that. And God wants you to have that so you yourself can be help to someone else and to yourself and your family. This is Dr. Michelle. Have a beautiful God-filled weekend. See you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.